Hello! Oh, thank you, Buller. Thanks for belch. Hello, welcome to the Big Show. Happy New Year. It is 2016. This will be the year of BTN. I can feel it in me water. I don't know what I can feel in my water because he's just pissed all over my toilet seat, but there you go. joining me to discuss the big week in technology, of course, don't forget, it's the Kickstarter show in Las Vegas this week. And you're saying, oh, Ewan, you're being a bit of an arse because it's the consumer show, not the consumer electronics show, not the Kickstarter show. Speaking to Jeff Gamet on Twitter, he's saying that I'm not far wrong, about 40 to 50% of the stands that are there are Kickstarter projects.
Oh, my.
The no price, no date show has evolved. It would seem. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, there's been a few stories kicking around, and I'd be interested to see what everyone's picked. But starting us off, top left, it's Camps. How you doing, mate?
I'm really good, thanks, you. Yeah, really good. Nice break over Christmas.
A lovely
back
break.
Back into it on Monday. All going really well.
Yeah, nice. Now, as you've become a regular on the shows, we've had your caricature done. and I drew on my experience of Yorkshire and trying to think of all the things that are very typically Yorkshire. And as you can see from the caricature, Len, I think, has captured it perfectly. If you're a Yorkshireman, I nearly took the piss and got him to put a red rose on, but I thought that would be red rag to the bull. So Chris's caricature has got a flat cap, a cricket bat, an I Heart Sir Jeff T-shirt and a white Lancashire rose, Yorkshire rose even. Are you happy with that, Chris?
Yeah, I'm loving that.
You did say that you think you look a bit old.
I look a bit old. I look older than you, Ewan, on there. How great do I look?
Yeah, but you are. That's what I can't get over, is you are great. Next time you're in front of a mirror, mood, if you can actually see your own reflection, there is a point there, I suppose. But if you can see your reflection, you are great, dude.
Bald.
No hair.
Well, we did get one that was without the flat cap as well as.
Like I said, these are my go-fast approach.
Yes. Most definitely. But I've got to say, I think he's encapsulated you perfectly there.
Brilliantly.
Excellent, mate. I would have one of Patrice as well. However, Patrice hasn't sent his pictures through.
No, I haven't had time for that.
No, send your pictures through, dude. We'll get your caricature done because you're owed one as well. Definitely. Next to him, it's Gaz. I haven't seen you in forever, dude.
It does seem like a long time, doesn't it?
Is that a waistcoat?
Of course it is.
Did you wear that with a suit today, or is that...
No. It's my casual gear now.
Right. Are you doing a gig later or something, then?
Yeah, something like that.
Where you been, man?
I've been about. Things have been a bit... it's a bit funny at home, really. We've had a not a brilliant year, 2015, and so I'm looking forward to 2016. I've been about doing a bit of rugby, doing a bit of this, ducking and diving, bobbing and weaving, all the normal stuff.
Muller in the chat room wants to know if you've got your iPhone yet.
No, not yet. I'm still waiting for it.
iPhone 6, was that also Gaz?
I think that's going to be an ongoing joke, isn't it, really?
It is. Gaz, where's my iPhone Malpass?
Yeah, that's it.
Good news, though, dude.
What's that?
I moved the bash. The bash is now the 23rd of July. There is no sevens tournaments, I've checked, around Bedford and Northampton, and the British Grand Prix is not there. Will you be at the Bash and the Curry?
I'm not going to commit because I could be away for the two weekends before that.
Are you?
And that won't go down too well if I'm then away for the. I'll make one of them.
Family.
I promise you, I'll make one of them.
Bring the family. Bring the family. Are you at Macstock?
Hopefully. I don't know yet. If I'm not at that, I'll be at yours.
Well, I've been badgered about being at Macstock, and I've got to say, I would love to go to Macstock. There's nothing I would like more than being at Macstock, but the only thing I can swing it is if I'm speaking, and I feel a bit cheeky not having gone last year, just saying, oi, I'll come, but only if I speak. So.
I don't know whether he's full or not. But,
no, I know.
It was good.
I would like to go very much, but I think I can't get it past the management over there. next to him, Lee, not seeing you for ages, mate.
Yeah, was that 20 minutes ago?
Maybe. Are you all right, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. Like everyone else, survived Christmas, New Year, back to work now.
Thank you.
Normality kicking in.
thank you for stepping in for an errant doc at the last moment.
That's right.
And picking up the slack. So, and next to him is Righty Boy.
I've been here from Norfolk, mate.
Why, are you a different time zone? Did it come late or something?
Yeah, we're still waiting.
You're still waiting?
Yeah.
It starts off in Australia, creeps across, then it does Norfolk, then it does England. I'm sorry,
totally that
what,
that?
What the hell?
That was dead.
That
I think I just like started a podcast.
That sounded like Kelly.
Sorry.
How was Christmas then, Righty Boy? Did you have a good break?
I had a nice break, but I was sick, and I got well just enough time to get back to work. And
bastard.
But whiskey, hot toddies, playing on the Xbox. My girl's looking after me grand. It wasn't too bad. Stinking cold, but still enjoyed the break.
Yeah, the thing is, you see, when I'm a dad to a boy, and I always wanted a son. It's like, I've got to have a son because he'd be my best mate. And actually, now I've got a son, he loves him to bits, don't get me wrong. But actually, my daughter's the one that comes in and mops me brow when I'm ill and
gives me a
cuddle in the morning and that kind of stuff. Ellis walks in and goes, aren't you up yet?
No.
So a house full of women, mate, would be cool. Looking, mopping your brow and checking you're all right.
Which is what I've got. Actually, no, the best thing about Christmas is, for the first time in 13 years, every day I got up after 9 o'clock. The first time in 13 years. So actually, it wasn't a bad break.
No. Muller Bikes says Ellis is Ewan. That might be truer than you know. And Batwinch has said, if you book into the B36 Travel Lodge, a room for 22, 23 and 24 only costs you £68 for all three nights at the moment. So there you go.
She'll be waiting for you.
It's 22nd, 23rd and 24th of July. So 22nd for the curry, 23rd for the bash and 24th for the pizza oven round at my place. And the What I Know Day and the Shoot the Breeze. And just have bacon sandwiches and chill out and get drunk again if you want to go home on Monday. There you go. Those are the definite dates. Tickets will be on sale in the next 2 weeks, I think. Well done. And last but by no means least, Patrice, thanks for stepping in again, mate.
Oh, no problem.
Excellent.
I was basically just here. I just stayed.
You are well, I take it.
I am really, really well, really relaxed, had a great break over Christmas and New Year's, survived New Year's, so I'm great.
Okay, mate, brilliant. The Week in Tech, what's gone on? It's been Christmas, of course, so there's not an awful lot. Marissa Myers had her ass kicked by the shareholders who sent a letter, and I think she sent a reply, didn't you say, Miller?
No,
it's just the letter that criticises her. If you want to touch that with the barge pole, then fair enough, go ahead. You'd be all right because Kelly's not here. And there's other stuff gone off with Apple that we've just talked about on the Mac Show, but some more. Who's got the first story? Who wants the Lion Campions in there already?
I'm
good.
I'm ready.
God, he was so fast. He'd already done the Control V.
Jeez.
Twitter close to longer tweets of up to 10,000 characters.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. I've got to say, this is a good discussion to have, really, because
it's all over.
Take us through your story, then, Chris.
So Jack Dorsey, CEO at Twitter, as this week suggested,
I thought he played trombone myself.
It suggested that increasing the character limit on Twitter is not out of the question. People are using Twitter for a hell of a lot more communication now, and actually, increasing the character limit may well be a good idea now. Totally understand that they need to grow the platform. Personally, not convinced that they need to go anywhere near unlimited or 10,000 characters. I think the 10,000 character limit comes from the limit that they've opened up in terms of DMs. They opened that up. I think it's about 6 or 8 months ago. They opened that up. They were previously 140 characters. 140.
Yeah.
Character limit on there as well. So. For me,
it just really feels like can you send a 10,000 DM?
Yeah, that's
the limit.
That's what it is. 10,000 on a DM.
Oh, no.
Nobody knows any different. I'm sure it's 10,000. I think that's where the 10K is coming from in terms of the.
So forget posting a link to an article.
Yeah, well, I think the issue that's been called out here is that. When you tweet, any images you put in there, any links in there, they all count on the character limit. So that eats up into your 140. And I think that's what's coming out as a bit of an issue, certainly in Twitter's eyes. But for me, all that does is that just transforms the platform much more into Facebook that we all hate.
Yeah. Batwench in the chat room says, I thought they had the 140 character limit because of limits on text messaging in the US. I think historically you might be right there.
That's how
yeah, I think that was where it started, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And then Mullerbike says, I'm happy with 250 max and not count the at stuff for or hashtags.
Yeah,
and that's the frustration. If you get into a Twitter canoe, that can be a pain in the arse because you get sod all that you can actually write thereafter.
Mm-hmm. I quite like the 140. I think it makes you creative in your tweets. It makes you think about what you're tweeting and not filling it with rubbish. Really, just make sure you're communicating the key part of your message to get that across to your audience. I think just to add a bit of context on this, the way it looks like it might happen is your first 140 still might be displayed in terms of feeds, but then there'll be a see more type button that'll essentially drag the rest of it in. So it doesn't sound like any plan would just turn your feed into reams and reams of text. It'd still be broken up, but still for me just opens up the platform way too far.
It kills their only differentiating factor to me. Yeah. they're not a blogging platform.
That's what I love about Twitter.
Yeah, no, I agree. If you look at, if you follow at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, then my profile, because the profiles allow 160 characters, my profile is exactly 160 characters, and I spent ages crafting that profile to be exactly 160 characters. And I agree totally with everyone that said, you know, that limit of 140, you sit, and when it goes, oh, you're over budget, you're kind of like, oh, right, okay, and you sit and work out how to make it 140, and then you've got this perfectly crafted tweet, bang on 140 characters, and you press send.
I think Muller's made a good point. Not many people say that, but I think Muller's made a really good point there that, you know, you take out the app, you take out the links from your character count, but you leave your core character count at 140. And for me, that feels like Twitter's got where it needs to be. I don't think it needs extending beyond that.
Yeah. Anyone else got any thoughts?
Yeah, he says in that post that he suggested that Twitter was looking at ways to give people more room to express themselves without polluting the service. Yeah.
Well, that's good. People,
well, no, I think this is business driven.
Yeah.
You think about the businesses that will be putting a load more information into here, and I think that's where this is coming from, possibly. Mm.
Well, they're just trying everything because they shoved that Moments thing out at the end of last year. They're trying this. They're trying everything to stay relevant because other social networks are leaving them behind. Instagram, Facebook, you know, a lot of us aren't using it anymore because we're in the Slack room. I think they're losing ground.
So I think the question then to ask is what's the identifying factor that is causing Twitter to go downhill? Because if you're saying it's business, I don't know many businesses that use Twitter actively and get anything fruitful from it. So not so sure whether that might be a driver in terms of yield on return on investment and that kind of stuff from people that have put venture capital into Twitter. But I don't know about business utilising it for 140 characters or more. But I think personally, and the thing that's really switched me off a lot from Twitter in the last 6 months is the amount of trolls that are out there.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that post a meme up which is there to do nothing else than create angry comment. And it's almost following like a Daily Mail or Daily Express kind of news ethic where actually, you know, forget what the news is that day, or what's the most important political affair or world affair that goes on. The Daily Express manages to post a headline and the Daily Mail manages to post a headline that is nothing more than getting the middle class, 60s plus, angry. And that's what Twitter has become. There is a post that goes up 5 times an hour that does nothing more than make me angry and upset, and I can't be doing with that anymore, which is why I've gone to the Slack room.
Yeah.
I think Twitter can include other features. It could include edit features. They can make blocking algorithms better, so you can get rid of memes. You can get rid of certain trends or certain themes that you don't want to see in your feed. I think that's probably, in my view, where Twitter can go to actually be a little bit more unique than some of the other platforms. So from a user end, you can edit the types of stuff you want to see rather than just be a block or an open.
Does that become a bit difficult to do, though? I mean, you can mute a name, you can mute a topic, providing it's hashtagged, and if it's not hashtagged, you can't mute it. So if I type in Rugby World Cup 2015 with a hashtag, you can mute it if you don't like rugby and you like the kick and clap version of the game. you can't mute it if it's not hashtagged.
Yeah. I suppose that can create an algorithm that means you can mute it without using a hashtag.
I would say so too. I mean, at the end of the day, what's the key feature of Twitter? What did make it great and successful? And that is the limitations of it. It was novel in sending messages from A to B. It was novel, I think, in the way that it did it. The 140 character limit, because it really forced you to be creative with what you write and how you transport a thought in that few characters. And I mean, you've seen what people did with it. So going away from that, I don't think is a good idea.
Has Twitter jumped the shark then? Is this the kind of desperation moment that kills it off?
They need to concentrate more on getting friendly with the developers again and taking away the token limits rather than trying to line their own back pocket with something like this, because they're on a downward, I'm not saying they'd be out of business, but they're losing a lot of people to it.
Yeah. I think you and they have jumped the shark to a certain degree. I mean, there have always been people who have said, yeah, we want a higher limit because, I mean, it's easier. People ask for higher character counts. Because then it's, I mean, you can put more ads in, you can put more stuff in, and it's easier to write. And I think the issue here is that they are starting to listen to the wrong people instead of really going back to what they are great at and what made them successful.
Yeah. I reckon this year they get bought. I think this is the year someone will buy them.
But who? Who will buy them?
Who's going to buy them? Yeah,
I think Google would buy them. I think Google is looking for a social strategy. Google Plus wasn't any good. And there have been rumors about Google sniffing around Twitter, and I think that might be quite a good link-up because Google really wants to get into that social space.
Google finished nothing, though.
No, exactly.
Google would buy it and close it.
Yeah, but I think this is the year where it'll all go downhill. Because they've been losing users hand over fist to the other social networks.
One thing Google Plus was really good at was blocking people. I used Google Plus for quite a while. And I quite enjoyed using it. And it's a very strong community. You always have really good comments when you put posts up. I've never had any kind of spam or problems with not blocking people or getting harassed or anything. So if they can integrate it somehow with that, then yeah, maybe. But
I think what killed Google Plus is the fact that there was no standalone app.
There was?
There was standalone apps on iPad and I used it on the iPad and the iPhone. And they seemed to work quite well.
But there was no pull. All you got on desktop was a pull-down menu in the taskbar, and you couldn't add more than one account on it.
On the desktop, you're pretty much locked to your
web browser. If you're going to bring out anything you want me to interact with regularly, I want. So this is why I love Slack. There is a Slack application on my desktop and on my iPhone, and that's it. I don't want to open Chrome and leave Chrome running with something, because then you get the issue with the fact that it goes, oh, you haven't interacted this for a while, so you need to sign in again. Oh, sod off. I don't want that kind of interaction. I want a standalone application that sits by itself and that I can work with. And Google Plus would have succeeded if it let me do that, and also if it let me sign into those communities that I wanted to be part of as multiple people, whereas... which Twitter has got. I've got the pull-down menu in Tweetbot that says, and Twitter, that says, I want to be signed as Ewan Rankin, I want to be signed as British Tech, I want to be signed in as anything else.
I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm doing that. Chrome allows you to add multiple what they call people, which are basically their own browser windows and browser sessions. So I've just created multiple people or multiple windows for multiple accounts.
I don't want a browser, though. That's the point. I don't want a browser. I want a single application with a pull-down that lets me switch accounts.
Yeah. Sure, that would be way better. But
and that's where Twitter wins. Most definitely it wins. And Slack wins because I can be in a Slack room and that's the end of it. you know, I don't have to go anywhere, I don't have to do anything. And if I sign in to Slack on my iPhone whilst it's open on my desktop, it doesn't kick me out of the desktop because I signed in on my phone. That's mm-hmm. that's ludicrous. I pick my phone up and I answer just a reply. Why should I lose that? And Gmail does that all the time. If you sign in, and the number of times I get requests now that go, oh, no, 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 you need to enter your Gmail address. Oh, sod off.
Yeah. Muller said something there that would really depress me around Facebook. If Facebook bought it, I just that would be the death of it for me.
I don't think Facebook need it. I think the only reason Facebook would buy it is if they wanted to essentially just kill it. Bury it.
Yeah.
Just take the competition out of the game totally.
Yeah, most.
And that'd purely be for advertising revenue.
Yeah, I don't. I personally think Twitter has lost me. Twitter has really lost me in the last 6 months. I'm so sick and tired of people trolling. I am so sick and tired of people. I actually value their commentary for 90% of the tweets that they put up, but their political views or their views on memes that they retweet just make me go, oh, sod off.
And I think for me, and that's where if the algorithm allowed you to block phrases, block memes, block certain content, that for me would probably push me a bit back to Twitter, because I'm same as you. I was kind of getting a bit bored of it. The reason I used it more were individual news articles or to keep in touch with everybody in BTN. I've got the Slack room now. I don't need Twitter. Daily I go in and I have a browse of it. But if I could block and I can mute certain topic types, I'd give Twitter some time again.
It's hard. I mean, there's a couple of people that I've unfollowed on Twitter, and it broke my heart to do it, because actually when they type something in about tech, I really want to click it. But because they want to type in something that's political or something that's meme-based that's to get me angry, I can't be doing with that. It drives me so mad that I have to say, sorry, but I'm unfollowing. I've sent them a message. I'm like, there's one guy, Dave, and I'm just like, David, I love you to bits, mate. I really love the tech stuff that you put up, but I can't follow you because you just put stuff up that's bollocks with politics. I'm just not having it. I don't want any, and it's not like I hate your political strategy and I don't want anything to do it. It's like, I don't want to do politics on Twitter. Sod off. I want to do tech. And that's where the Slack room...
And all of that could go into that one 10,000 tweet if they go that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad enough that he puts 140 characters up of something about the Labour Party that I don't agree with without putting 10,000 words up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it only shows the first 140 characters and then you click on a link, I think that's where it's going to die anyway, because the Facebook does that now, don't they? You get the FBK link that comes up afterwards, and I personally have never clicked. There's a guy called Kenneth who I follow on Twitter, and he follows me, and he puts an awful lot of stuff up that's cross-posted from Facebook, and there's a link that goes through, and I'm just like... I'll click in that. I'm not going to log into Facebook so I can see what you wrote about a dishwasher. Not having it.
Yeah. I've basically stopped using Twitter. The only time in the week where I use Twitter is to retweet Ewan's tweets for the shows.
Thanks, that's mate. It. I'm honored.
Yeah, that's really, that's it. Because there is nothing on Twitter anymore that interests me.
I think that's true of a lot of people. Gaz, I barely see you on Twitter.
Yeah, I've kind of the same thing, really, Ewan. It just kind of nothing's happening there. It's, you know, same old, and it's got it's pretty much the same as you all the way through. It's just memes and it's links to crap. And
so why don't we see you in the Slack room, mate?
Well, I am in the Slack. I mean, I joined Slack fairly early on. I just haven't transited. That's not a word. I haven't transited over to it yet, really. I need to.
That's still not a word, but never mind.
No, I know, but who cares? I've got a cold.
Good lad.
I've got a dog. Mate.
Good lad. See, Doc would have got upset at that, whereas you just come back with something pithy. That's good, man. No, I mean, if you're wondering what we're talking about, then we've got the Slack room, okay? So we've got Slack, which is an application, slack.com, and there is a BTN Slack community, the Slack room. If you would like to join it, then all you have to do is send an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com saying, let me in the Slack room. There's a few rules I'm going to send you to start off with, because we don't want the hateful memes and all that kind of stuff. We don't want people being DM'd. There's a lot of people in there who've got the personal email addresses up and that kind of stuff. But if you want to get in, then send me an email and we'll let you in and we'll see how it goes. If you want to start abusing it and you want to start posting stuff that's offensive, then the admin axe will swing freely, I promise you. But other than that, you know, it's pretty free and easy going. And there's a few people in there that are very, very competent as far as tech is concerned, and Apple particularly. A few Apple geniuses that used to work at Apple.
And as we've learned on the Mac show, in order to get in, you have to send Ewan a bottle of whiskey and me a bottle of wine.
Just an email. Stop.
Just an email, okay.
Gaz, what's your story, mate?
Well, I don't know whether you've had the follow-up to this. Do you remember the dress?
The blue and the gold, or the white and the green?
Yeah. Did you do the follow-up story?
No. What was that?
Okay, I was quite interested in this, actually. I saw a link, which I've put in the room, from the BBC with reference to... Well, what it said was, the dress, hashtag the dress. The couple basically said that they were completely left out of the story. And I thought, what? Couple left out? What are they going on about? Now, do you know what the story was and how this picture came about?
So there's a white and gold dress that in one picture in a certain light looks purple and gold or purple and black or something.
It's the story was basically it went around the world saying about the fact that some people see this as one colour and a certain part of the population see it as a different colour. Okay, fine. How that picture came into existence was that there was a couple going out, and I think they were looking for dresses for a wedding. And the mother or whoever it was sent a picture to a relation, and that relation said, don't like any of the first three, but I like that last one, and said the colour, which was the opposite to the actual colour of the dress. And they went, hang on a minute, what do you mean? No, it's this colour. Okay, so that's where the story starts. And I think it was the couple that were getting married, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, the sister... who then picked up on the fact that they'd got this picture of this dress, which was blue and black or gold and white, whatever it was, posted it on Facebook. Okay, from Facebook, let me get this right, it went to BuzzFeed. And then BuzzFeed picked it up and got 39 million hits on it. BBC Trending also then published the story about it. Okay, so it then went global. So what you think? We've all seen it. Well, apparently this couple feel as though actually it was their property, i.e. the picture, that was taken in the first place, and that other companies have now gained or did gain, or they profited out of it. So this is where obviously this is ending up and where it's going. What I found interesting about the whole piece was the fact that how easy it is to lose your property, because they didn't post it. A relation of theirs posted it onto Facebook. We all know what the regulations and the terms and conditions on Facebook are. Somebody else then posted it somewhere else. And then all of a sudden, you've lost, ownership of your of so-called property. You're a photographer, Ewan. You know what it's like. You take a picture. You don't need people stealing that picture and using it. You'd like them to buy it. I just found the story, because it goes back and does the backstory. It also tells you about the colour and why you see the different colours. But it also mentions that this couple they're doing interviews in the US where there's probably a little bit of money, I'm assuming. They're just saying that how they lost and was left out of the whole process, and that their story wasn't told along with the whole, the whole picture.
So what they haven't thought of is the designer of the dress.
Well, I think it's a combination also of the way you see the picture on the internet. I think there's lots of other things. The fact that they took that picture, and that picture is the one that is seen differently by certain people on the internet, then that's possibly where the story is coming from. So the design of the dress may, it could have been anything.
I've had a
but that is, you know, that's a point as well. I just found it quite interesting that the story had raised its head again, but obviously it was because the couple presumably are trying to get a little bit of recompense, as they see it, out of, or recognition, let's put it that way, recognition over the fact that it was their picture that started the whole thing off.
It's an absolute, copyright terms, it's an absolute minefield.
Yes. Because, yes.
I've had a lot of abuse over the years, when I did the photo show particularly, where people said, you can't be a professional photographer because you've got nothing in Flickr. Most of the people who are in Flickr are not professional photographers, and a lot of professional photographers that post in Flickr perhaps don't have an awful lot of work anyway, as they've got nothing else to do. Most of what I shoot is not party to public information. It's something that I couldn't share with anyone without permission from an organisation. And mm-hmm. most organisations, it's easier to say no than it is to say yes, so I can't share it. If you look at this dress, it's a great example of where copyright just goes absolutely mental, because the copyright of the shot that's taken, in the context in which it's taken, in an area which is probably not their own, because it was taken at a cocktail party, was it not?
No, I think they were trying it on. I think they'd been trying on lots of pictures.
The picture,
so
I saw looked
not,
like it was,
I'm not,
the,
I think that's
the, public
the
venue.
Start of the original dress picture.
But you see, the thing is, if you take a picture in public, as in the street, then there is no copyright issue or no release issue. It's reportage, and then you haven't got much of a problem unless you use it for commercial gain. If you start taking a picture at a cocktail party inside a hotel, then there's licensing issues with the hotel because they own the space. And then yep. you get into the copyright issues of the design of the thing that you are taking a picture of. So it could be a fountain or a sculpture, or it could be a dress. And actually, if you look at them, you know, they're doing their interviews and they're getting their money for the interviews as
yep.
Correctly or not. I don't know if that's a true statement or not, but you wouldn't be surprised to find out if they did get paid for those interviews. I think you might find that's all they're going to get from this, because the minute they start to register an actual claim, you'll probably find that the designer of the dress will step forward and go, because it's my dress.
Well, it's funny that Batwin just noted that she said that the dress is currently out of stock.
Yeah, but the point is that the designer of the dress, because what they've taken, they didn't have a license to procure money from that. They didn't have a release.
Yep. Yes,
from the designer
yes,
of the
yep,
dress.
Yep, yep.
Anything that they then get from a lawsuit with Facebook, which they probably don't own because of the fact that Facebook conditions say that they own the picture, then they're going to lose that anyway, because even if they do own the picture and Facebook say, we own the picture, the designer will still go back and go, sorry, I own the dress, I own the design of the dress, and any pictures of the dress that make money are mine, not yours. And Facebook will lose, despite the fact that they've got a condition that says, oh, it's our photo, because it's not their photo to procure in the first place. If yep. you want to know more about this, try submitting an images to stock image websites of sculptures mm-hmm. that are distantly in the background.
Well, and I thought, actually, if they're going to have to sue anyone, it's probably the person that their daughter or relation who posted it in the first place.
No,
without their permission.
That would be pointless.
Well, no, but the point I was making there is, as you were saying, it's a complete minefield, and they're wanting to get recompense, but you know, it went viral very quickly.
Yeah.
But they didn't mean it to go viral. It wasn't that they were trying to make money out of it in the first place equally. So it is the fact the way something can suddenly run out of your control.
I think, yeah, exactly. I think that's a great point of where the legality rests with viral, especially when you look at something like this, where no party at all, apart from Roman, apparently, who is the original designer of the dress, according to this story, I think, is that right? Has any copyright claim whatsoever.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about copyright, then best of luck.
We can help you.
I've been taking pictures for 30 years, and I've got a good idea, but it's not exact. Mm. It's not a science, mate. And the thing you've got to watch for is, like I said, architectural value. That's the key part that will get you. So you go into Birmingham, you take a lovely picture of the horizon, if you like, or the scenery of Birmingham from one of the high hills out towards Bromsgrove or out towards Nuneaton, and you'll probably find that virtually nothing in that photograph is something that you can sell because of the copyright issues of the buildings that are included.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Interesting.
Great story. I love copyright claim issues because they're just bollocks.
Yeah.
Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? Paul Lums has put it in. Which one of yours is, which one's yours? Fortune or the NPR?
Yeah, Fortune.
Fortune. The Fortune story. Go for it, righty boy.
Well, it's kind of a new story and a question for everyone on the panel. So it's the new year. So most of us are thinking about getting fit, aren't we? Hence why I'm drinking water on a Thursday night, which isn't like me, but I am thinking about getting fit. But a lot of us are looking at tech to you know, to help us get fit using apps or fitness trackers. And I've got two here. I've got my Fitbit and my Jawbone. I'm using my Apple, my iPhone. But they're all giving, like, different results. So I don't know which one's correct. And then I read this story today that Fitbit, there's a class lawsuit about the accuracy of their heart rate trackers. So three plaintiffs are basically saying it's incorrect and it's not giving them accurate information. So I'm just wondering, are these devices actually mature enough to actually give us any decent readings, or are we just wearing them because it makes us feel like we're doing something? Because...
Well, I read an article this week from, is it Martin Lewis, the guy who does the...
Money Expert.
Money Saving.
Money Expert. Mm. His wife, a BBC reporter, she's been wearing, I think it was two or five separate trackers, all at the same time, over something like 5 days. And something like three out of the five were fairly similar. The other two were very similar, but way off the mark against the other three. And against that, she'd either interacted with the spokesman of Fitbit. I think there was Misfit as well. And another one name escapes me at the moment. And basically, the response that was in the interview for those was all very similar in that, okay, yeah, there may well be accuracies. They all use different algorithms in the way that their fitness trackers track activity for the people. But the key thing is not necessarily the individual accuracy of the tracker. It's how that tracker itself, over a period of time, gives you certain patterns, and it's the difference in the patterns that you should use. Now, for me, I feel that's rubbish. Inaccuracy is inaccuracy. It's not
exactly
you need to say.
Yeah.
But really interesting interview. I'll try and find the link there, and I'll bob it in the chat room.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I've been doing. I've been wearing, like, you know, using three at once, but I'm going to the gym every day now, and they've got their own equipment. So I don't know if what I'm doing, like, day to day before I go to the gym or after the gym is tallying up. So I don't know if it's actually, if any of these things are accurate. Is there anything to prove that they are as good as they say they are?
Can I just go to sorry, Patrice, but I need to go to Gazmos because he had his hand up, which is great on an audio podcast.
Yeah, well, I knew you'd see me. Well, the two people before have said, oh, well, because it's not accurate, it's not going to do me any good, or it's no use to me. Words to that effect. That's where I'd slightly disagree.
Yeah.
To say that if it is inaccurate, okay, it's inaccurate. Agreed. You're not doing what you think you're doing. However, I've known that. I've had a Fitbit for ages. And I've used it, but I know it's not accurate, but I measure myself against that device all the time. And I just suddenly thought about the time when I used to run a marathon back in 1996. I only had my own steps. I got out on a bike with a mileage calculator on it to go and check my mileage. So I can't think that was any more accurate than these devices I've got now. Now, if they are saying that they are accurate to X percentage and that you can use them to give yourself an accurate measurement to do X, Y, and Z, then, yeah, you've got to start throwing it back in their faces. But I certainly use the Fitbit as a, right, I've done this much with this Fitbit, and I've done this much today with the Fitbit, which was more than I did with that particular Fitbit yesterday. Now, if the device is giving me different readings on different days, I'd like to punch somebody in the face, as it were. I don't think they are. If they are giving me wrong readings each day, throw it out the window. Absolutely no good. But if you're doing something which you weren't doing before because of these devices and you're increasing that amount on that device, I don't think that's too bad a thing.
It depends a little bit on what you're measuring and what you're trying to do. If you're if you're measuring steps or just movement, a little margin of error doesn't matter. I mean, even if it's 1 day 5% off and the other day 5.5%, doesn't matter. It's the relative differences what you're doing. But if you're using it as a medical device, and if you're tracking your heart rate, and if you're basing decisions on, especially on your heart rate, and then the accuracy
makes a difference. Of 50 quid. I mean, it's life changing.
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes a difference. And I saw an article, I think right after the Apple Watch came out, where someone compared the Apple Watch's heart rate sensor to a really professional medical device, and the Apple Watch is actually pretty good.
It's shit.
But
because it's not the Mac show, but so right, I went to London. And I got on the train and I sat all the way down to London. I walked to the tube and I walked off the tube and I walked probably half a mile from Victoria to Buckingham Palace Road. And then I sat there all day and then I walked back to Victoria and I rode the train home. And I got like 10,000 steps registered on my Apple device.
I wasn't talking about steps.
Let me finish. So then the day after, I got up in the morning. I had a shower with my watch on, admittedly, so that might be vigorous rubbing of my hair whilst washing it. That may have clocked a few extra up. I sat on my arse at the very desk that I'm sat at the moment all day, and then I walked back home. I got 6,000 steps. There is no way on God's green friggin' earth that I did 6,000 steps. I spoke to the wife the other day, and I was saying about heart rate, and she said, well, what's your heart rate now? So I pulled up the heart rate, and he said, 42 beats per minute, measured 1 minute ago. And then 42 is low. I do have a fairly low heartbeat anyway, and there's a history of low heartbeats in my family. So then it went, oh, hang on, and it really is. No, you're now at 72. My heart rate went in 1 minute from 42 beats a minute to 72 beats a minute. My rosy red arse. And that's the point. And I've got no Fitbit.
Stood up too quickly.
I've got no other thing. No, I was stood up the whole time. I've got no other device to measure it. I'm doing Apple device to Apple device, going back to the conversation we just had on the Mac show about apples and pears and pears. And this is bollocks. The information that comes out on the Apple device is utter shite.
But isn't it going to measure your averages? But isn't it more to do with what your average is rather than what you are at that particular time?
I measured your heartbeat 1 minute ago at 42 beats per minute, and now it's 72. But rosy red arse. It's got fudge all to do with averages, because I haven't got the time to edit.
Well, no, but...
I mean, mine seems to be fairly constant.
As long as you haven't
right
moved
now,
your hand in that time, then, yeah, you're right in saying that this probably, it is a bit crap, like, but there's lots of things that can affect it.
I don't know.
It's moved slightly and things like that.
Someone with real medical knowledge has to check that out. I mean, all we can talk about is anecdotal evidence, whether it's working or not. But whether it's accurate or not is something someone who knows what he's doing has to figure out.
Muller Biker went to bed with a Microsoft band on and woke up with 300 steps recorded.
They weren't.
What
steps.
The fuck?
Yeah, actually, steps, yeah. I'm not. I wouldn't. You be careful there, because if you're wearing it, how much movement you do in bed at night? Hey, come on, that was a restful night for him, surely.
No, he sleeps on his own, mate.
It should only have taken about 150 then.
I've watched me cat, and I've got to say, the number of rabbits that Muller must be chasing at night in his dreams.
Who knows?
Bastards.
Does Muller have to get his right hand drunk?
I see you fucking doing that.
Oh, I need to turn the red down on the camera, because that's... I think anyone that buys something that tells them what they're doing and thinks it's accurate is an absolute moron.
Yeah.
I think anyone in this lawsuit deserves to have their children taken away and be locked up. I'm sorry.
It's whether they're claiming it's giving you a certain amount of accuracy that, you know, then you can understand it. But I agree with you. If you any of these devices, if you think they're giving you really accurate information, then think again. Nope.
There we go. The voice of
what do I get then?
For what? Believing them?
If you need an accurate device, you have to get a proper medical device. That has been approved, that has been tested, and that you know is working.
As a bloke who lives in Norwich, mate, this is equivalent to selling the house cow for a magic set of magic beans.
Paul, give...
I'll be like, God.
Keep the one. You said you've already got several devices, Paul. Is that right?
Yeah.
Keep the one that gives you the best results for you.
And Chris,
the one that gets the most steps, yeah.
And Camps, yeah. Camps, if you want to improve your fitness, buy a Whippet. Patrice, you put the next story. Oh no, LG. Lee put the story. Lee, talk us through your story, mate.
So my one is one of the many ones that come from CES this week.
It's around a
drone, but it's a self-driving one that you can actually go in.
This scares the shit out of me.
I know, that's why I raised it. I thought, because it got me thinking about, I'd never really put the link together between self-driving car and a drone, you know, because a lot of the technology that a self-driving car would have in place, you know, about avoidance and things like that. A lot of that sort of functionality is already within a lot of drones. But I looked at this thing. It's scary, basically. it can put you into... it looks like you just point to somewhere on Google Maps, say, right, take me there. The battery life is only 23 minutes, so you want to hope nothing happens. It's one of those stories, you read it through and you think, oh, that's kind of cool, and then you think, would I actually get in it? That's why I wanted to raise it. I thought,
does it measure your heart rate?
Would you guys trust, I mean, I'm not saying maybe the 23 minutes, but I personally, if this was tested and it, you know, it was proven, I could see that being cool, you know, just getting in something and saying, right, take me to work or whatever, you know, without getting the car. But
who's measured that 23 minutes, and, you know, how accurate is it? That's what I want to know.
That's the hover time, presuming a net weight, including passenger, of 2,000 kilograms.
200
kilograms.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't get in it. I wouldn't trust it.
Which means I've got no chance of getting in it, because I'm about 140 kilos to start with. So I mean,
it has got air conditioning and Wi-Fi, mind.
Yeah, that's not going to shrink in enough time, mate. I mean, it's like... Yeah, if you get in, we'll sweat it out of you before we take off.
Yeah, you'll be nice and nice and cool when you die. You know,
but
ball off
the thing
flames.
Is, the picture you're looking at now, if you're watching the video thing, that is a thing that holds a person, which means that the propellers that are rotating wildly, eight of them, outside the door, are probably 10 to 12 feet across.
Good point.
And it's just like, so in the event of an accident... You get out at the side and two propellers, well, actually, say four propellers on one side and four propellers on the other, are rotating wildly next to you, doing several thousand RPM, and you're going to climb out of the side door. I don't think so.
Built-in Minsa.
I mean, like I said, does this thing take your heart rate? Because if I was in it, it would be way off the scale.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I mean, I personally don't think, you know, this is just, you know, like most CS, you know, is vaporware. It's not something that they've even tested or doubt yet.
But
it just got me thinking about it.
No, this thing, the Airhang, is 440 pounds, 8 rotor aircraft, which the company claims is able to lift a single person 500 meters into the air and lift them to any point on Google Maps, within 23 minutes. But it says that they've actually had flights including people. They've done test flights with people.
This will ever get a flight anywhere other than in the middle of the desert or somewhere like that. I just can't see that any authority in their right mind would get a license
I can see that landing anywhere.
Well, hang on, guys, because in the Zhang province of China, the Airhang 184 has flown for 23 minutes in a heavily wooded area, including a person. A person sat in this with a human passenger inside. Supposedly, it's going to cost between £130,000 and £200,000 for price tag. Air conditioning and in-flight Wi-Fi. So when you're dying, you can tweet your last thoughts to your loved ones. Even though the aircraft has remained static on the floor and not yet soared into the air with a human passenger inside. There was a report I saw, it's not this story, I saw another story that said that it had flown in a heavily wooded area of China with a person inside it. So.
But They never get this through the authorities. Like I think somebody just said, it's like, you know, yeah, it may be possible, but can you imagine anyone signing that off? Any country signing that off? So, you know, I couldn't see America or us. You know, a lot of Europe, most of Europe wouldn't sign it off.
So, you'd have to have a pilot's license for it, and it'd have to be tested. And
you'd have to, yeah.
Have you seen the Martin Martin jetpack thing? That's the twin blade fan.
I think so. Yeah.
That's only been tested in Australia, and that's never going to make. I don't believe that'll ever make real commercial markets across the world because of the fact that the aircraft won't get approved.
Yeah, and even if it was safe, if you're in the cabin, I mean, just imagine this thing taking off anywhere. I don't know, and someone walking or even an animal running into this thing. I mean,
well, you'd have to use traditional airports. You couldn't,
yes,
or a hub.
Absolutely.
You couldn't use your back garden for this kind of thing. I mean, did you see the guy that created he used effectively a multi-rotor board and put it in and had 20 or 30 motors running, and he actually test flew it, and he looked like he was getting away from him at one point, and he looked like a housing estate in Milton Keynes, and you're kind of like, well, I can admire the engineering, mate, but really, there's better places to test fly in the local park.
Yeah.
And it really was. It was the local park. You could see houses in the background. And you're like, what on earth are you doing, man? You'll kill someone with that. Not least yourself.
Yeah.
And these things, that if you want one, that's fine, but don't think for one second you're going to be taken off from your back garden with it, because you aren't. No.
And that... In my opinion, that kills a little bit the purpose or the point they're making with getting you anywhere on a map, because you need the airport wherever you're going.
Deep Pan has put a video link in for YouTube that in the chat room. If you're wondering what we're talking about with chat room links and that kind of stuff, there is a chat bot. And if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, he says a possible flight video. I think that's a computer-generated graphics video myself. I don't think it's real. Then again, no, maybe it is because there's a shadow, but that looks like it's unmanned. So actually, no, well, yeah.
Are you watching the video on the wired.co.uk site?
I'm watching the one that Deep Pan's just put in the chat room.
Well, there's the one that's on there is there's lots of crashes on it of prototypes and early creations.
No, so
it seems to hint about, it shows a guy going up and getting in and then going up, but it doesn't show him actually flying anywhere in it. So
no, there's a link on that Deep Pan's put in a possible flight video, and it is the correct item, and it is real because there is a shadow that's tracking it and looks very realistically painted against the horizon. I don't think this is a fake. I think this is.
Yeah, you don't know if anyone's in it, and you don't know the size of that, because that part of the video was on the Wired one, and actually they showed you one of those devices, and later it was about this big.
So
this 18 inches square or so.
No, well, based on the size and the shadow and that kind of stuff, I think it looks very realistic. So. Shadows can be photoshopped, Muller, but I don't think this one is, because they've got the dithering really well done, and it looks the right size based on how far the thing is away from the surface that it's tracking across. So if it is photoshopped, they deserve a prize because it's frigging awesome. Photoshopped in inverted commas, as in.
Anyway, in answer to the question, no, I wouldn't get in it.
No, I'm sorry. I think the point is that, you know, we've always been looking for the flying car, haven't we? I remember. Yeah. Do you remember Insight? Some of you are too young for this, but I'm going back to the 70s, and there was a magazine called Insight that you got every week, and it built in a set of binders, you know, classic stuff. And I've got all of them. I've got absolutely all of them. They're still at my parents' house now. There's 7 binders full of this magazine. And it dealt with the space shuttle before the space shuttle had even launched. This magazine was talking about it. And they were talking about was it Moby? Do you remember Moby, the flying car?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy had this company that manufactured Moby, and I think he lived and died, and you know, he lived off the wages of a product he never actually manufactured. And the Moby car was going to be the thing that changed us all. You'd drive off the drive, and then you'd drive on the road, and then you'd take off and fly off. And the thing that killed it was the fact that you had nowhere to take it off from, because you couldn't take it off in a street because it was too dangerous. And that's where this thing's going to fall down. I mean, you know, the breadth of this thing is wider than most people's gardens, but you know, you take it off and you slightly lose control and you're into the house next door to you and you're killing their children and their pets, you know, let alone
or the garden.
So, you know, it's no, in the house.
Because you start you're killing the garden.
No, you're killing the house because the size of the blades that are in this thing and the speed that they're running at, holy crap.
They're putting windows through.
Yeah.
Windows. So, putting windows through, that well-known Yorkshire pastime. what's your story, Patrice?
My story also comes from CES. This year, all the studios and also all the device manufacturers have at least pre-announced, again, Vaporware, who knows, Ultra HD Blu-ray players. And also the titles for it. And I've picked one story out of, I don't know, 10 or 15. It's the one where Warner Brothers announced the first titles. And they will release 4K Ultra HD resolution with HDR. Four titles. Four are Mad Max Fury Road, San Andreas, The Lego Movie, and Pan.
Good movies, then.
And, yeah, actually... Well, Mad Max Fury Road was okay. The rest,
Over.
and this year they want to release 35 titles. So I think something like Man of Steel, Pacific Rim, Warner Brothers stuff.
Good titles then.
Yeah. Not
so,
those.
So CES have announced a thing of the future that's old Blu-ray.
Yes. That's why I picked this story, because I mean, I wanted to hear your opinion. Do you even care about Ultra HD Blu-rays at this point?
Man. I thought HDR was the thing that a lot of people were looking forward to. I mean, our TV is quite a few years old now, but I know it had a bit of a wobbly a few weeks ago, and I thought it was gone. So I started looking into TVs and HDR seemed to be the next big thing, but again, I've not seen hardly anything of it.
Is the question about that, though, Lee, about delivery? I mean,
it's all about content, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Well, it's all about getting to the end user, is what I'm saying, and that's the point. Yeah, exactly. You know, 4K is great. You can stick it on all the servers you like, but actually delivering that content to a certain person at a certain location with the buffering that's required, with the outward bandwidth that's required from the server that holds it. I mean, you can imagine iTunes. I mean, the value and stock of Apple in terms of their capability to deliver bandwidth for 4K movies is huge, but they haven't got a device that could deal with it, and most people haven't got a connection that can deal with it. Yeah, so therefore, the only way to get it to them is via post, via a Blu-ray.
Via a Blu-ray, yeah.
If I remember correctly, I think for Netflix, in order to use 4K or to stream 4K, you need at least, 25 megabit connection. Like that.
I don't believe that as a figure, though, even then, because I've got a 200 megabit connection at home and 1080 freezes once in a while.
It's
only going to be as fast as the slowest bit of pipe in the process, isn't it?
Sorry, let's start with Gaz. Go on, Gaz.
I said it's only going to be as fast as the slowest piece of pipe in the whole network that you're utilizing the video. So,
which is fine if you want to watch the movie at 11 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah, I you know, did Everyday Joe, are they worried? Do they care?
I don't think so.
Righty, what was your point?
Well, I think with the quality TVs are now, if they're going to have to wait like 3 hours to download it, or they're going to have to get discs through their letterbox, I think people are just quite happy with what they've got at the moment, you know.
Yeah.
4K is nice. It's where HD TVs were many years ago when they're very expensive. But you can get a really decent HD TV for £400 now. And people from the rooms, I think they're quite happy with that at the moment. And until 4K TVs come down to that sort of price, I don't think it's really going to take off.
Yeah, I mean, even the 4K TVs aren't that expensive anymore.
But the content is.
Yes.
That's the trouble.
Yeah, I think the 4K TVs, I think you're right, the prices are absolutely coming down. But it's physical content now. I think the point there around waiting for things to download and strange probably more key that the physical content. I for the first time just before Christmas, just after Christmas, I've had to go out and buy a DVD player and a Blu-ray player. I've not had one. I've not had a need for one for years. But the amount of people that bought my daughter's DVDs over Christmas was I need a DVD player to play them in the room rather than show her how to stream from Apple TV and rip them and all things like that. So I've got to buy one, but I've managed perfectly well for a number of years now without any device to play physical media on, and I'd rather stream media. So yeah. I don't, I'm not convinced that people want to go buy physical media just to get the increased content plus the price of that physical media.
You're kind of at the printer market at the moment, though, aren't you? Where the device costs less than the ink.
Yeah.
So
yes,
you know, the actual physical ability to play 4K is nonsensical in terms of cost, but actually the content that you have to stream on that and the physical means of streaming it is 10 times the value. My personal view, I spoke to a guy the other week and he said, oh, we've gone to this camera because we want to start filming 4K, and I was like, why? He said, well, you know, we want to make higher quality productions. Okay, but where's your end movie streamed or shown? Corporate intranet or in a meeting room?
Yeah.
I mean, I shoot...
recorded an SD then.
I shoot 1080 and people go, wow, that's awesome quality.
The point is, I think what people are trying here is, you know, you make it 4K and it makes the content better, really.
No. Well,
selling gimmick.
No, you see, now hang on, because actually, I had a company this year who said, could you shoot a time lapse for us from our office work? Because the work we're doing is actually just right underneath our office, which would be amazing. Yeah, sure. So I went up with a DSLR and I shot full frame size, so 18 megapixels. And I shot 14,000 images on a timer device that I had plugged in. And at the end of that, I had 14,000 images that I had to sit and process it, and I made a 4K movie out of it, and it looked incredible. It was...
No, I think you're missing the point a little bit there, Ewan. What I'm saying is people think by getting a better quality, it makes the content, whatever that content is, better, which it doesn't. You put some effort, time and effort into that particular video and that process, and it was... probably perfect and great for what they wanted, and you've actually quite impressed yourself with what you delivered at the end of the day. Some people think by getting a better screen, it makes whatever content, like these movies that are available. You said they're going to make Mad Max Fury Road, San Andreas, the Lego Movie, and Pan. Great.
But
having 4K HDR doesn't make those movies any better.
No, but nope. What I'm saying is I made a 4K movie. And in the end, the only thing I could do was drop that into a 1080p frame and give them that to show on a projector that was actually shooting and showing 800 by 600 or whatever at a venue.
At least for now. I think the thing is,
what I'm saying is, even though it was something that was shot in very high resolution and then compressed, it looked better than... I did make a 1080 version and a 720p version for them as well. It looks significantly better. I mean, a lot better than the 1080 and immeasurably better than the 720p version. There was something went on with the compression that actually made it look far better than it did when it was actually at the resolution that it was actually being played at in the first place. So there is something going on, and it shouldn't work. I totally agree it shouldn't work, and people are going to write to me and say it shouldn't work, Ewan, it's just bollocks, you're just talking out your arse. But the 4K compressed version looks significantly better than the 720p version, even though both of them were being shown at 720p.
Yeah, and if you think about the future, I mean, we are seeing this with, I mean, movies from the, I don't know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s even, that were shot in higher quality than was than could be even streamed or shown at that point.
Look at Catch a Thief on Blu-ray. To Catch a Thief on Blu-ray was transferred from the 70mm cinema. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that is in pristine condition, and it is the best thing you will ever see.
Yeah.
Or not that, North by Northwest, sorry. My mistake. North by Northwest. was shot in 70 millimeter.
Yeah, so there is, for at least for certain content, there is value in shooting it at higher qualities.
Anything that's been shot in 35 millimeter or 70 millimeter film is significant beyond anything that you can possibly buy at a store. So, pointless.
Yeah.
Film is better. Not. It is, but it's just a pain in the ass. Still,
yeah.
The quality's higher, but it's just a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So a thumbs up, thumb down. Is UHD Blu-ray titles going to make it? Chris?
Thumbs down.
Thumbs down. Gaz?
Down.
Down. Patrice has already given his thumbs down. Down. Righty boy.
Down.
And Lee, you were very quiet during that, Lee. Thumbs down anyway.
Down, yeah.
Down, down, down. I think the thing that will make the difference is delivery. If people sit and look and look and look at 4K and go, oh, it's the Nirvana out in the distance that I really, really want, but my internet connection won't let me have it, then it'll be a winner. But as long as there's a connection that will let you have it, I think you're stuffed. Oh, my monitor's going to power off. Oh. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. Thank you so much to them for supporting us, because we couldn't do without them. They are absolutely fantastic. If you listen to this podcast, then you only do it because UK2 bothers to support us. They take nothing in terms of money from us. They give us a £500 a month server that we couldn't afford on our own if they didn't do it. And they also give us the live streaming via 100tb.com, and they allow the NQL channel, which is the Not Quite Live channel, which comes on the live page that you can click every day of the week. Just go to britishnetwork.com/live, click on play, and there will be a story from the past. There will be an episode from the past. Some absolute doozies have been out this week. Pat Shot on the Bum House was my favourite today, I have to say. I really enjoyed that title. And there's also a whole pile of other stuff goes on there. We're going to put up the news show as well. So you will get a static image of Kyle reading you the news show, even though it's audio only. And you're going to get news show from the last 3 days, which is going to be interspersed through the day at random as we go along. So there'll be random show, interlude, news show, interlude, random show, and so on. Oh, this is going off. There we go. Check it out. It's thanks to UK2. Please support them because they support us. And thanks to everyone who supports us in Patreon. A few people have amended their donation during the Christmas period and put it up, which is very kind. Thank you very much. We survive entirely on handouts, if you like. We are, as I said to you earlier, we are the people that sit by the side of the road with a tin cup and a sign that says children's support. So if you would like to donate to British Channel Network, it goes into buying lights and microphones and new computers and all the stuff that wears out that keeps us bringing the shows to you. And even that really doesn't cover it. It costs us a lot more to make the shows than it does to actually get from the Patreon stuff. So we've got fantastic people who've supported us for a very long period of time in Patreon. Please check your donations, because PayPal has a nasty habit of not rebilling properly. So the first you'll find out about it is if I write to you and go, thanks very much for everything you've donated, sorry that you stopped the donation. The reason I know this is because Muller had the same problem. It stopped his donation, and it didn't tell him, and it didn't tell us, and it just stopped. PayPal's a bit of a bastard for doing that. So please check your donation. Please check that it's being taken, and hopefully it still is. Thank you very much to those people that have donated. It makes a world of difference. And please keep donating. There will be benefits to people who donate, I promise. Cool things. It's time for the cool thing. Who's going to start off? It's going to be Chris Campion.
So mine. So I've been waiting for one of these for a long time.
Bang. Oh, you haven't.
I have. So for a long time I've been wanting Sonos. And never really managed to pull the funds together, moving into house, doing so much work. But this week, and I'm sorry, we're talking about this a couple of days after it finished, but over the weekend, Amazon had these on offer at $149 for the Sonos Play 1s.
And you didn't post it in the Slack room?
No, I've just posted it in the...
That's a strike, dude. Chat room. That is a strike right there. Ooh. You saw it at £140 and you didn't post it?
I'm sure it was in the Slack room the weekend.
No, I didn't see anything.
You tight Yorkshire git.
Sorry. But yeah, 149 for the player one over the weekend. So I thought, I'm going to give it a go. I'll give it a try. If I don't like it, Amazon are fairly liberal on their refund policy. Let's
take it. You like it then, eh?
Love it. Absolutely. So easy to set up. I was sort of playing off between that and the Bose SoundTouch 10. The advantage of the SoundTouch 10 that I could see is that it had Bluetooth, whereas obviously the Sonos doesn't. But I thought I went for it anyway. I've been looking at it for such a long time. Plugged it in, set up really, really easy. Joined the beta program so I could use it with Apple Music. The sound out of it is stunning. It has a true play function on it where you use your phone. You need a quiet room to set up. Use your phone to move around the room. The speaker belts some random sounds out. Obviously, the phone's listening for it. And it essentially, from what I can gather, tunes the speaker for the room. The sound out of it is lovely. Listen to a few different tracks. My wife, to be honest, while I've been at work this week, probably used it more than I have.
Oh.
I'm honest. Acid test for me is if the UI from the app. So the way it works is it streams the content directly from the internet to the speaker. The app on your phone is a controller and probably nothing more than that. So the acid test for me is if the wife used it. Whilst away, she was playing some music through it, and then thumbs up, and yeah, working really well.
You can actually stream music from your device to the Sonos.
No, mate,
so it's more than a controller.
But Patrice, that's got nothing to do with it. The fact his wife is actually using it and happy with
that's
the test.
Yeah. My mom is using it, so
if my wife uses any tech I buy, I know I've hit a winner.
Mm-hmm.
What I need to do now is fund the purchase of the next one for the dining room. And
well, if she's using it, mate, she's going to go, oh, we've got to have that, Chris.
Yeah. Definitely. Lovely. Lovely device. If anybody's sort of pondering it, do I, don't I? Sorry, maybe I should have shoved it in the Slack room. I thought I had, but apologies.
I'm sorry, Camps.
It's worth the money.
You're dead to me.
It's worth the money. Sorry.
Yeah.
Gaz, what's your cool thing, man?
Right, I saw this on Amazon. I got a bit of a voucher, so I thought I'd go for it. Now, talk about taking people's names. You've heard of GoPro.
Yeah.
Can you see that? Can you see the name of that? It's back to front probably on the film, but it's Yopo.
Yopo, yeah. No, it's right.
You've heard of it, have you?
No, I can read.
Okay, that's good. Let me just post the link before I show you the device on the phone. Now, I know that this is not the Mac show, but I own an iPhone, and basically what this is rather a large lens.
No kidding, that makes up for other problems, doesn't it?
Yeah, that does. It's a 12 times optical lens. They also send you in the kit a wide angle and macro lens as well. And it's like £33. It comes with a little stand as well, a little...
holder?
It comes with a case. It comes with the case for the phone as well. And I thought I'd give it a go. I haven't given it a full testing on the pictures and the imagery yet. I mean, it won't be outstanding, but, you know, it's £30. What's to lose?
Is that a lightsaber, says Steve?
is that a pre-Silverstone purchase?
it's a sonic screwdriver.
Uh-huh.
it's Yopo. The quality's not going to be fantastic, but... I've taken one or two images and they seem to be okay. So, yeah, brilliant.
I'm guessing, because if you look at the top of that, you've got a ring around your... I've got to be so careful here. there's a ring around your lightsaber there, which when you screw it on to the stand, which is a standard 3/8 or quarter-inch connection, I would guess, if you slacken that tightening screw off at the top, it allows you to rotate your eye through portrait or landscape. No?
Can loosen it.
No, that's not that. That's the wrong screw.
No. Actually, it comes with a frame, which is better to do that.
No, that's still the wrong thing. So pick up the phone again. On the top of that, there is a ring with a screw on it.
Correct, just there.
If you slacken that ring off, does that allow you to rotate it?
Yeah, and that can twist around.
Right, so that allows you to rotate through portrait and landscape.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is what most professional lenses do. If you look at the 70-200mm Canon lens. That's got the same thing. It's a ring that allows you rotation.
It's that ring which you can rotate, yes.
Per portrait and landscape. That's worth the money on its own. The rotating ring on the Canon 70 to 200mm, because I broke mine this week, I can promise you it was £150 for a new one.
Good grief.
So that little ring there is value. Oh, real they, value.
I don't know how good it is, how strong it is, but yeah.
Well done. What did you say it was? 12 times zoom?
12 optical, yeah, 12 times optical.
And it's
zoom.
Optical as well. Plus a fisheye, plus a macro.
Yep.
That's really good.
I couldn't resist it.
Top pick, dude. I like that. And it comes with a little bag as well. And
it comes with a bag as well, yeah.
And a mounting frame, if you like, I suppose.
Yeah, you've got to, what you've got here is obviously you've got a frame, so it gives it a bit more stability.
Take your phone out of the clip there and then people understand, I think.
What do you mean?
So the phone is in a bracket, isn't it?
Yeah, the phone is. Yeah, it comes with a case, which obviously you screw the lenses into that case, which I'm just showing on the video there. So, I mean, most of these options come with a case, which you then have to screw the lens into. Even the other clip one does that. But this frame just gives you a bit more stability because you can put this frame around the phone like so. And then obviously that can be fitted onto any of the stands.
There we go.
I mean, for the amount of money it costs, the stuff that you get is kind of worth it on its own, to be honest with you.
33 quid out of pocket already.
Yeah, I'm ordering too.
Expensive show. Good pick, mate. Lee, what do you have for us?
So this week I've got a book. So this is linked. This is a Star Wars pick, talking about lightsabers. This is The Art of Star Wars, Force Awakens book. It's quite big. I don't know if you see on the video, it's quite a big book. But basically, an illustrator worked alongside the kind of the production crew and the costume department and stuff all the way from the kind of early design phase all the way to when it was released. And the book works in chronological order of how, you know, characters are developed, characters are came in and out, and you know, ship design, all that kind of stuff. So if you're a real Star Wars geek like I am, I need to ask you, wear my T-shirt. But,
for those of you who just did a double take, that was ship design, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Ship design.
Ship, yeah, that's right. I've just noticed it's out of stock at the moment on Amazon. sorry about that. I just spotted that, but I definitely recommend it. I've bought these kind of books before, but I've been really impressed with this one because it's just really big. It's a really big book. It's really great illustrations, but it's the fact you've got all the storyline along with it as well. You know where they filmed it, and how the characters are designed. It's really interesting. Seeing the amount of stuff that they cut out of the film, all the stuff that. Where characters and the main stories, you know, developed over time. So if you're a Star Wars geek like I am, I definitely recommend that. But
probably better than the film.
We're not talking about that.
No.
I loved it personally, but I don't want to get into a Star Wars argument.
I'm not going to do any spoilers. I promised. I'm not going to do any spoilers.
Right, he'll back me up. It was a great film.
He was wrong.
No, he but you know my wrong. Thoughts, right? He's you wrong. Know my thoughts, right? I'm right, aren't I? Just back away from that one thing. The rest was okay. Righty boy, what's your pick?
Well, I've got something that I saw earlier last year. A company called Jide. They released a few products, their own laptop, a tablet, and a little mini desktop computer. The thing that I thought was quite interesting about it is they developed their own version of Android. They forked it to work like a desktop operating system, so it's got its own start menu. So they've kind of brought in Chrome OS and Android and brought them together. I thought it was a really nice idea, but I wasn't too keen on the hardware. But at CES this week, they've announced that the operating system's going to go free later this month, and it'll work on any x86 PC. So if you've got an old PC that's running really slow and you can't run Android on it, or you can't get hold of Chrome operating system, this will give you the best of both worlds, and it's really, really fast. I've been playing with the 1.5 version of it, and later this, the 2.0 version comes out, and it's a really, really sweet little operating system. So if you just want like kind of your own little Chromebook, it's worth looking out for.
Excellent, mate. So it's got to be a PC, though. Could you dual boot as a Mac?
Yep, and Linux. As long as it's x86. Okay. Should be absolutely fine.
Fair enough then. Good pick. I like that. Patrice, your cool thing, please.
My cool thing is another book this time, because I already picked one in the next show. It's from Bill Nye, from The Science Guy. You might know from Star Talk, the podcast with Neil deGrasse Tyson. The book is called Undeniable, I think. Yep. Trying to remember it now. Undeniable, and I haven't read it actually yet, but it's ordered, so I will, as soon as I finish the last one I'm currently listening to, I will read this one. And it's from what I've heard and seen from it, it looks actually interesting. It's about evolution, it's about science, and he really explains a lot how creation really works, and yeah, why races not really exist, stuff like that. So it's actually a good book. I'm signing.
Looks good. Okay. I've listened to a couple of interviews with Bill Nye. He's very, very good.
Yeah.
He comes across.
He's really good at explaining.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I don't necessarily agree with everything he says, but he comes across well.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And actually, the podcast Star Talk, I can just highly recommend that one. It's really interesting.
Joel, good pick. Thank you. What am I doing? Right, there we go.
Your pick.
No, I haven't got a pick. I'm trying to think of some techie that I've picked in the last week or so that's really cool. But the one thing I did get was I got the Atomos Ninja Assassin, which, if you're not familiar with that, it links to the 5D. I bought a 5D, Canon 5D Mark III. And it instead of being recording in the 5D, it gives you an external audio recording device. And it takes SSDs that you just slide in and out on caddies that it provides you with. And the audio system is unbelievably good quality. And I've been using that for interviews this week, and it is top hole. It was £1,500 when I bought it. It's now under £1,000. Isn't that the truth? And it's great. It really is good. If you shoot with a Canon of any description, then do check the compatibility, because I shoot with 6Ds an awful lot in the past and they don't work, so you have to buy a 5D to go with it. But the 5D Mark III works perfectly with it. You need a clean HDMI out, but if you've got anything where you want to record a really good quality, then use that. The other thing is it uses LUT files in it, lookup tables, so you can specify the look that you want, and you can program those looks and save them as well, so that when you get to a certain venue, you can say, right, I want it to look like this, and it will automatically change the look of it to underexposed, overexposed. It will also do an exaggerated green version so that it's easier to key out as well. So if you do any interviews against green screen and that kind of stuff. It's £1,000. It's not cheap, but it's well worth the money if you do that kind of thing. There you go. And the 5D Mark III is awesome. Love it.
Yes.
Absolutely adore it.
Yes.
Although the stills aren't as good as a 16 low light, I have to say. where can we get a hold of you, Yorkshire Camps?
Camping UK on Twitter, or in the Slack room. Loving the Slack room.
Slack room's great, mate. We've got some great people. Yeah. The BTN community is just unbelievable. Every day I wake up and all I want to do is talk in Slack. I go on Twitter when I'm having a crap in the morning, and that's it. Not interested after that. Same as you, mate. Gaz, you need to get yourself in the Slack room more.
Well, yeah, I do, because I'm Gazmaz in Twitter, and I'm Gazmaz in Slack, and Gazmaz most places.
Yeah,
you can go over to gazmaz.com if you like. Equally, I do a podcast with Guy Searle. We call it the My Mac Podcast, and we call ourselves the G-Men. Just put in Gazmaz. You're likely to find the face. Not this face, but the face. People who know me know what I'm talking about.
Excellent, mate. Good. Glad to have you back, mate. Come here again soon, please.
Yep, absolutely.
Lee, where are you, sir?
So you can find me again in the Slack room. I'm going to try and get in there a bit more. But across BTN, Twitter is LGPUK, and my site is waitingtodownload.net.
And if you want to, the guitar show as well for Lee, if you want to get into Slack room, just send me an email to BritishTownNetwork@gmail.com saying, please let me in the Slack room and I'll send you all the details. Righty boy.
Paul, I'm on Twitter, mate, in the Slack room and at BritishTechNetwork.com.
Excellent, mate. And making up the last person, I've just realised that our show, it might not be British Tech Network, it might be European Tech Network. But we've blocked the Americans here.
Yeah, that's actually true.
Before I just do Patrice, we have had some reviews, actually. Have I done reviews? I haven't done reviews.
No.
We've had some reviews. Real Mad Scientist has said, I must not drink while podcasting is a seminal moment in podcasting. Even my son burst out laughing at this, and he doesn't like my podcast normally.
Yes.
thanks from Alex. I think I've read that before. We've had one from Canada as well. TJC said, one of the great things about the show is that there are reviews from outside of the US, hence my comment. Three to five panelists are not US people. Ewan Rocks, thanks, mate. Keep up the great work. And a really great panel offering entertaining roundup of the latest shows inside and outside the world of tech. You have all of your international mates coming together in the pub to enjoy an overnight few drinks and chewing over the latest tech news. If you've got a New Year's resolution, then I should suggest it should be subscribe to this show. And the last couple, thanks for the 11th of December big show with you and Kelly, Jeff, Lee, and Righty and Paul. It was always entertaining, but this week you're always entertaining, but this week it was the best 2 hours that went by in no time for me. All the best in tech and a lot more. It's the big show, thanks to Big Al in Liverpool. And FNUF says, the title says it all, achieves exactly what it sets out to do. I used to listen to a number of American tech related podcasts, but since I discovered these shows, they sound stuffy and too predictable, and every so often a real gem emerges that spans two episodes and means that my fellow train passengers thinks I've lost my mind completely. Maybe I have. Roll on 2016. Hayborn says, just a quick review to say, great show, informative hosts and guests, especially Kelly, Doc, Rock, Adam, Jake, keep you up the good work, Ewan. And also, this was repeated on the Mac show as well from Nicholas. And now we know that Santa Claus is, for 365 days of the year, he hangs out amongst us as a disguised as a professional photographer called Ewan Rankin. And when he's not happy, he presents and produces jolly podcasts about all our favourite tech topics. There you go. There's a bit more to it as well, but thank you very much. If you've got a review, then please leave it. There's nothing more that you can do to help the network than A, leave a Patreon donation, and B, leave us a review in iTunes. The review in iTunes makes a massive difference to our location.
We're hot this week, Ewan.
Please review. We are, actually. We're well up. Please review all of the shows, and that goes for every single show that we listen to. Please subscribe to them and review them. And if you already subscribe, then unsubscribe and resubscribe, and it bumps us up. Even further in the rankings. Cheers. And last but by no means least, Patrice.
You can find me on the Mac show every week, every now and then on the big show, on Twitter at @casual_kitchen, and all the links and stuff I do on thepatrice.com.
Thank you, mate. My name is Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and you can follow us on British Tech Network at BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at British Tech. We'll be posting stuff up. The new show will be there every day, and Kyle will be plugging away, keeping it going. We give you a big service, and I hope you enjoy it and love it, because 2016, I think, is going to be our year. There is some stuff coming that you would not believe for BTN. Please spread the word far and wide. Sorry if you hate us. We're here to stay. Ha 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 ha.